for thou shalt not be ashamed, neither be thou confounded, for thou shalt not be put to shame, for thou shalt forget the shame of thy youth, and shalt not remember the reproach of thy widowhood anymore. Basically, what that says is if you fear not, you'll neither be ashamed nor confounded, and the things that you learned as a child, which were a mess, and are still causing you to make messes, you will forget that. And also, you'll not remember the fact that you've been rejected many, many times, and with good reason, by the way. And the fact that people reject you and count you a widow will no longer upset you, because we have one who will never reject us. But you see, it all hinges in this scripture on fearing not. Now, it doesn't mean don't fear, period. It's talking about not fearing anything or anyone but God. If you remember, the word fear from the Hebrew meant morally to revere, to be fearful of God. And that doesn't mean don't fear God or don't revere God. It means don't make a god of anyone other than who God is. Because, see, whoever you revere, whoever you fear, will have power over you. And whoever has power over you is always indicative of how your life is. Now, if drugs and alcohol and temper and poverty have power over you, then you have the wrong God. You see, it doesn't matter how much you say you love God. It's what you're afraid of, what you fear, what you revere, that really controls whether you're going to be ashamed and confounded. In other words, we are told here not to revere anything other than God. The word revere, if you remember, meant to regard something with deep respect, love, and awe. Now, I can't really understand why any of us would have the bad habits that we do and knowingly want not to do those things that hurt our bodies and still do them without revering those things. It has a power, and yet it doesn't. It has a power that's really supposed to be toward God. In other words, what I'm saying is, you could be just as addicted, just as dependent, just as needful of what's right as you are of what's wrong. See, what's right doesn't have any power by itself, and what's wrong doesn't have any power by itself. Because if it did, then it would look like wrong has more power, because there's more wrong in the world than there is right. So you see, it isn't that there's power in those things. Jesus didn't say, I give things power over Satan and the powers of darkness. He gives it to individuals. Then what you have to do is return that power to whatever you want to be addicted to. Whatever you want to control your life, you just revere that. Use your power to revere and make that sacred, and then that has power over you because you have power over it. In other words, I have the power to command God to have power over me. I have the power to tell him you're going to have authority over me, and that's it. Now, that's a strange contradiction, isn't it?
Yeah.
I can command God to command me. I own him. He's mine. I own him as my king. Now, as my king, that means he owns me. So you see, this revering power, this power is vested in you. It's not in your cigarettes, your alcohol, your temperament, or your desire to always be broke. Now, people that are always broke have something wrong besides the fact that they're always broke. They look at everything around them and nothing works right to them. Everything is broke. Mostly because they don't like the way that it works, so it's broke, see? So they spend all of their lives complaining and judging and criticizing all of this brokenness. And then when the brokenness hits them, then all of a sudden they say, oh, Lord, help me. God Almighty, help me. how you have made being broke your God. Well, that's how you keep your wife in line. You find where she doesn't work right, where she's broke, and then you use that to keep her under your thumb. All you have to do is find a place where she's broke, where she doesn't work right. So you see, you revere the power that you have, but you use it in the wrong place. Because that same wife that you keep under your thumb, God forbid, but should she ever decide to walk out on you, I'll show you what kind of God you are. You'll fall apart and lay on the floor like a cheap rug, because mommy will be gone. And not only mommy, it's that you don't have anyone to revere now. You don't have anyone to use your power to make them have power over you. Now, why would a man do that? Why would a man give his wife power to make him mad, to make him upset, to make him act different than what a man ought to be? How did the woman get that power? Well, you gave it to her. You see, what you did is you gave the power that Jesus gave you to that wrong in her, and now it has dominion over you. And the most laughable men that I know are the ones who think, they say, my wife doesn't do a thing without my authority. Really? Then how come she, when she looks at you cross-eyed or doesn't do it exactly the way you want, you fall apart either in anger or in fear or both of the above? Well, the fact of the matter is you made her a god. You revere her. And because you revere whatever it is, and it can be your wife or whatever, you have a reverence then for that that you revere. And reverence means a feeling or attitude of deep respect, love, and awe for something sacred. What other explanation would there be for someone staying with you in the condition you're in? Why else would someone want to even marry you in the first place, much less stay with you? Well, you're their reverence. You're their reverend. And everyone that comes here has their reverend. And then the battle starts, because I say, hold it. Just a cotton picking minute here. That's my job. So then if the wife no longer counts you her reverend, then I'm the enemy. I become the one who's the source of your problems. Oh, and she should be holding you as reverend. But how can you be reverend if you have no reverend? Right now, my reverend is Isaiah. He's my spiritual leader, my spiritual head, and I'm telling you everything he's told me to tell you in what he wrote down. I'm doing exactly what I'm told. You, on the other hand, seem to think you have a liberty that I don't enjoy. You don't have to have a reverend except if and when you damn please. No. You can choose which reverend you have, but you have one. In every phase of your life, you have a reverend. And the one who's your reverend is the one you have reverence, or the thing you have reverence for. And you can tell what you have a reverence for, who your reverend is, by what you reverence. And reverence means a manifestation of reverence manifested by a bow, a curtsy, some similar gesture of respect and obeisance. In other words, whatever you obey. And I know the only person that you obey is you. So that makes you your own reverend. So since you've decided to be your own reverend, see, the only time you agree with me is when you agree with me. Whenever you decide that you don't want to agree with me, then you're right and I'm wrong. Well, you take the Fifth, the Constitution, you plead the Bill of Rights, and everything else is your sovereign right to do that. However, when your wife and children do the same thing, you scream revolution and anarchy. I don't understand how you can think that you can twist the Word of God into some double standard in which you can do and say whatever the hell you want unless you agree, and then expect your wife and children to be different. Now, I thought a long time ago that I could solve my problems of raising my children by being their friend. And we went out and threw more balls than I can count at each other. And to this day, one of them doesn't speak to me, and the other one barely does. So that didn't help. I threw money at them and toys and everything else. That didn't help either. Well, I didn't know this. You see, I didn't have this to reject. What I did out of ignorance. What you're doing because you reject the truth, and that makes you dumber than I was. And I was dumb. Reverence also means a title used in speaking to a clergyman. So then we look up, well, what is this reverend person? I mean, why do things or people have such power over me? And don't tell me you don't have a reverend, because when someone looks at you and says something derogatory about you, you go into the toilet, either with hurt and pain or with retribution and anger and attack back. That's your reverend. That's the individual who you reverence and awe. They become your reverend. Reverend means the title of a clergyman, but it also means anything that's worthy or deserving of respect, reverence, and obeisance or obedience. So you see, whatever you decide to fear, whatever you decide to make sacred, because fear or reverence also means something sacred. And sacred means something that you set apart. And I always can find out what's sacred with you. The minute we get on a particular subject and you get upset or you don't want to talk about it anymore or you get to lying about it, I just found your golden cow. You've just had a cow, Bart. I found out what's sacred to you. The minute you call me and tell me what your wife said to you that caused you to be such a bad boy, I now know what's sacred to you. You don't allow her to say or do certain things. That's your sacred cow. What you've just told me is that's what you do. And you don't like that fact that she's chosen the same reverend that you have. And what amazes me is with some families, the wife will choose me as the reverend, and that gets you upset, man. And then if she chooses the same reverend you have and cusses back and fights back with you the same way you do, that makes you upset too. So the fact of the matter is, you don't know what the hell you want, do you? Well, after this message, you're going to know. You're even going to know why you want it. You've made things sacred that shouldn't be. You see, when you make truth, Jesus Christ, God, sacred, when you fear Him, then you will have an automatic desire for fear and obedience to God Almighty. Now, when you are fearing the truth, you would not be in the messes that you're in on a daily basis. You would not be afraid that your wife might leave, that your wife might this or might not that. Wives, you wouldn't be afraid of your husband when he comes home and acts like a fool. See, when I see someone act like a fool, I laugh. See, that's what fools are supposed to do. They're supposed to make us laugh. You know, they're clowns. Now, how many? I've never gone as many times as I've been to Circus and Circus Vargas and Ringling Brothers. I've never seen any one of you, wives or husbands, sit there and watch the clowns and get mad or angry or cry. Why? Because they're acting stupid. However, that changes when hubby gets home and acts stupid. I just laugh at him. I am not going to fear and revere stupidity. It's to be laughed at, not to be respected. Well, I don't respect him. Yes, you do. The minute he gets upset, you get upset. Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. There is no better or truer manifestation of obedience, respect, and honor than to imitate. So I constantly get calls from men who are angry at their wives because their wives are angry at them, which tells me there's a whole lot of cows over there. Hit them up, drive them out. Don't try to rope and ride in Brenton. Hit them up, keep them home. Keep them broke. Well, you see, we have a cow problem over there. And when I get there, you're up to your armpits in chips, aren't you? Because everybody's playing poker with the chips. This is the poop you did. Well, no, you did some of this. Well, what do you have? Well, I have five aces. Well, what do you? Well, and you just keep it up. Just keep it up. Playing with the chips, right? That's a disgusting. Full house is right. What you need is a royal flush, friend. And that's what I'm here for. Lord, no one shall ever topeth thee. Goes for you too, Blackjack. So you see, you've made something sacred. And what it is, without any power of its own on this earth, you've given your power to it so that it can abuse you. Or if you gave that same power to the truth, it would make you better. But instead, you consecrate, sanctify, and make an agreement. And you get reconciled to wrong. Now you made something sacred that isn't sacred. Because the word sacred also means to regard something that isn't sacred and give it the same respect and reverence accorded to something holy. So you see, you can make a non-sacred thing sacred. And I always run into people that don't want to talk about certain things. They don't want to deal with certain things. They want to deal with what's wrong with their husband. It's the same thing wrong with them, but they want to deal with it in them because, see, to them it's sacred. They really don't like it, and it isn't the action that's sacred. It's the fact that it's in them. That's sacred. Now, in everybody else it's wrong, but in you, we don't want to talk about it. So you set apart and dedicate some person, some purpose, or some sentiment as holy. And therein lies every addiction, every habit, everything you're trying to kick and can't. It's because you've made it sacred. Now God says, if you don't do this, thou shalt not be ashamed. In other words, pick a clergyman, a reverend, Isaiah, and let's have him lead us today. And he says, if you'll do that, you'll not be ashamed. If you fear not things that aren't holy as if they were, you'll never be ashamed. Well, some people say, well, I'm not ashamed. I have grace. God loves me anyway, so I'm not ashamed. You have no idea what ashamed means. He says, if you're fearing the wrong things, you will be ashamed. Because if you fear not, thou shalt not be ashamed. So let's see if you're ashamed, because if you're ashamed, it's because you're fearing the wrong things. Well, I looked up the word ashamed from the Hebrew, and it means to be delayed and disappointed. Ashamed means to be delayed and disappointed. Oh, brother, I've been trying this, and how do I do it? We'll just talk about it again. This is delayed, isn't it? This is a damn shame, is what it is. Ashamed means to put off something to a future time, to postpone something until later on. Now this, what I'm telling you, is what you do is you postpone right so that you can do wrong. Yeah. Now if we can postpone right to do wrong, why can't we postpone wrong to do right? I never said cancel now. That'll happen. But all I'm asking you to do is postpone it. And you won't do that. You'll postpone right and say, well, yeah, I'm working on it. You'll postpone right in order to do wrong. And when a person does that, he says, that's a shame. And you're going to be ashamed. And you are ashamed because you put things off to a future time. You postpone things. Delay or ashamed also means to slow up and detain, to stop for a while and just linger. In other words, this is as far as you're going to go for the time being. You're going to wait until your wife's on the verge of leaving, or you're on the verge of leaving her, or you're on the verge of some catastrophe. You're on the verge of not being able to pay your bills or some horribly bad thing, and then that might prod you a little bit so that you can start going again. But the fact of the matter is, it doesn't matter, because as long as you're fearing the wrong things, you're always going to revere the wrong things. You're always going to be ashamed. You're always going to be delayed. You're always going to be retarded. You're always going to be behind time. Isn't it amazing that when you have all the work that you can do and then some, you don't have the time to enjoy it because you're always working? But then when you have no work or very little work, you got a lot of time but no money to enjoy it with. So you see, what's always delayed and postponed is fulfillment. Delay also means to disappoint. Disappoint means to fail to satisfy the hopes or the expectations of. I don't care what you eat, snort, sniff, smoke, drink. After it starts wearing off, it never fulfilled the expectations, did it? It leaves you unsatisfied. Disappointment means to leave you unsatisfied, to frustrate you. In other words, these are all the things that you're trying to find some happiness in, and the best they can do is make you feel good for a little bit, but then they make you feel twice as bad as they made you feel good. So you see, you just continually get worse. So then you need more of that to get the same high, but you get much more of a low. Then you need more of that to get the same high, but you get more and more of a low. So you never really get the, quote, high you're looking for, do you? Because of body tolerances. Eventually, you'll take so much of it that you'll overdose and die. And that's the ultimate low and depression. Why is it that you're so disappointed? Why is it that you love to get things into your system that do not satisfy, do not produce any good thing, and leave you frustrated? Why are you disappointed? Well, it's because you've appointed dis. Not that, dis. So we look up dis, and you know what's coming. Dis means the god of the lower world. Dis means, in front of a word, means when you see dis, it means what's next is just the opposite of what it says. So disappointment means the opposite of being appointed. Dishonored means the opposite of honor. And it goes on with all the dis words that you want to see. Always look at it, and what comes afterwards means to be just the opposite of that when you see dis in front of it. So you see, dis means the god of the lower world, or the one that causes you to be the opposite of what you say. So when you're disappointed and you say, oh, I love the Lord and I'm trying so hard and I really am trying to, why isn't God doing his part? Well, you see, what you're telling me about yourself is just the opposite of what you really are. Because if the God of the lower world wasn't your God, you wouldn't be disappointed. You would have everything that you need. But somehow or other, you think because you can successfully lie to me that you can successfully lie to God, and you can't. See, your life will prove you. So now you're the opposite of what you say you are, the opposite of what you want to be. Then you get so frustrated when your wife, who's just the opposite of what she says. See, I like this when we're counseling. And I can always tell. See, I have my opposite meter. And the husband starts. And then they're both, you know, very prim and proper. And we just prayed and everything. very prim and proper, and the husband starts telling me how wonderful he is. And there's a slight little curl in her lip. It always starts on the left, and it just kind of up a little bit. And then the corresponding eyebrow and eyelid, kind of like they try to make each other. This one goes up and this comes down. Like, and then they give each other that little side glance. And I can always tell, whoever's talking will always look. They're talking to me, and out of the corner of the eye, they're watching to see if she's blowing the whistle. And she is. But then the opposite is true when she starts her little soliloquy. Oh, alas, poor Yorick, I knew him well, yes. And then he starts the same way, like, you know, it's just like this sideways glance, like, I know there's someone in here that knows I'm not telling the truth. So you see, you think you've got me, but see, I'm not watching you anymore. I'm watching the lie detector. See, because I know that she's more than willing to tell the truth about you. So I don't depend on her when she's talking about herself. She's lying in her teeth. But she's my ally when you're talking, and vice versa. So you see, what I have is two people who are the opposite of what they say they are. And you see, it doesn't take a genius to figure out, because I walk in, they say, brother, we've been having some real problems here. What is it, my brother? Well, we have this, and we can't do this, and this, and that, and the kids this, and my wife this, and me this, and that. And then the wife says, and yes, and I agree. And then she says, and I'm just trying so hard. And he says, I don't know what else to do. I go to church. I do everything. Oh, how wonderful you are. Yes, and you're doing wonderful too, ma'am. Oh, yes, I'm trying so hard, and I'm doing my best, and what have you. And I say, wow, here's a nice, wonderful person doing just perfect according to them, and a wife doing just perfect according to them, yet they're telling me that their life is just the opposite of what they are. Now, just how big a dummy do you think I am? See, you're just the opposite, and it doesn't take a genius to figure that out, because first you tell me how bad things are, then you come and tell me how wonderful you are, which tells me then that your life, your family, is just the opposite of what you say that you are, and I know that's a lie. So see, right off the bat, you become the opposite of what you say you are. Now, how do you appoint dis? How do you get disappointed? Well, the word appoint means to select someone officially for an office and a position with all of the authority that goes with it. Appoint means to decide the disposition of something by special authority. So you see, you have to make a decision to appoint wrong over your life. And the way you do it is when it is obviously wrong, you claim to be the opposite of what's going on. And that is the definition of dis. That is the word. That's what that prefix means. It means to be the opposite of whatever follows. So all I do is listen to you, and then I know it's the opposite of what you said. It's just very, very simple. You see, that's why children and you have lost your ability to lie to me a long time ago. Oh, you can still tell me untruths, but you can't lie to me anymore. See, there's a difference between an untruth and a lie. When you say something that isn't true, and I can see right through it, it remains an untruth. But when you say something that isn't true and I believe it, then it becomes a lie, because see, it's deceived me. And why do you all get upset? Because your untruths deceive your wife, their lies. Your untruths deceive your husbands, because their lies. And your untruths stay untruths when I talk to you. Now, what's the problem with that? Well, sooner or later, husband or wife is going to say, oh, I see how that works. And then when your wife no longer accepts your untruths, you can no longer lie to her. She can see right through you, and vice versa. Well, at that point in time, of course, I am ruining your marriage. I think you have a head start on me, considerable head start on me, in ruining your marriage. There wasn't much there to ruin to begin with, because you'd already done a job long before I came along. Now, how does all this happen? What is it about being ashamed and being putting things off? How does it manifest in your life? The next thing from being ashamed is you become confounded. Now, I have never seen a family, and I preach family because that's what we are, family. I have never seen a family in which the husband had an addiction, a desire, a reverence, something sacred, that the mere mention of that says we don't talk about that. We don't talk about this. And the wife the same way. There's certain things we don't talk about. Well, when they have all these gods, sometimes I walk into your homes and I could swear, spiritually, of course, discerning in my own baby blues, I see idols. I'm in a Catholic church here. I see the Stations of the Cross. I say, Saint, not me. And saying, they did it. All the patron saints. Saint, I'm perfect. See, these are all the patron saints that you have. In fact, I read in the paper this morning that the Catholic Church is asking the Pope to name a patron saint for all of the victims of AIDS. This saint that's going to come to their rescue if they have AIDS. His name is Aloysius something, and that'll tell you right there, the guy couldn't have been all that sharp. But Aloysius is going to be a saint for all those who have AIDS, which is an incurable plague. And this is why they chose him. Sometime during the 18th century, I believe, he was working with some people in Spain or somewhere who had a plague, a sickness and disease. And he caught it and died at 23. Now, I don't think that he can do me any good, because if he knew anything about it, how come he died at 23? And that's the one they want to... I say, man, don't you have enough gods already? Don't you have enough reverence already? Oh, no, they ain't got enough. They want another one. And it's obviously one that couldn't help themselves. But I get ahead of myself. You're confounded. You see, people that when you keep putting things off, when are we going to get this done? Lady, I decide when. Well, when? I'll decide when. I know that, but when? I'll decide when. In other words, there's never a time, is there? Because you are ashamed. You keep delaying, postponing, putting things off. Well, what does that cause? It causes everyone to be confounded. Thou shalt not be ashamed, neither be thou confounded. I've never run into a situation where I saw people confounded, where it wasn't because of shame and fear. Now, the word confounded means taunted, insulted, wounded, and hurt, which is what happens in every marriage, in every problem. Whether you want to tell me you're Saint Aloysius or not is really not the issue. I know how you feel about your children, Saint Aloysius. But I also know that your children have no respect whatsoever for authority. Because all I have to do is go to school and find out how they act at school. Oh, I know around you and your whips, they might be all right. But they don't have respect for authority. Because if they had respect for authority, they'd respect it everywhere. And the reason they don't respect it everywhere is because you don't respect it everywhere. Well, you'll barely sit still for it in here. So now we have a family who's taunted. Taunt comes from a French phrase, taunt for taunt. Isn't that a wonderful, I see French, taunt for taunt. You know what the English translation is? Tit for tat. You know what the spiritual translation is? Railing for railing and accusation for accusation. Always a husband defending his taunt by attacking a taunt, by throwing a taunt at the taunter. And taunter throws another taunt at taunter, and I say, man, all you lack is the Lone Ranger here. Tit for tat. Never ever coming to grips with what's wrong with the individual themselves. Always looking for the answer in knowing what's wrong with someone else. That's a confounded individual who's ashamed, by the way. you're delaying and putting off finding out what the hell's wrong with you because it's sacred to you. You don't want to, you like that pedestal you put yourself on, and you don't want to talk about what's wrong with you. You'd rather spend your life talking about what's wrong with everyone else. So as a result, it becomes a family of taunt for taunt, tit for tat, railing for railing, accusation for accusation. And because you're a sinner, as I am, if she waits long enough, she'll find a tit. She will. And if you wait long enough, you'll find one too, and then it's tit for, and you'll find a tat for her tit. Yes. I cannot be held responsible for what's going on in your degenerate, perverse, dark recesses of that cesspool you call a mind. See, I mean, you indicted yourself. I didn't say anything about it. You did with your snickering, like a little child snickering. Now, you know what I'm talking about, but we also know what you're thinking about, don't we? Now, what I was talking about and what you were thinking about were not the same thing. So you're preaching your own sermon, aren't you? I can't be held accountable, and I will not be held accountable for that. Taunt means to reproach in scornful and sarcastic language. You are killing each other with sarcastic language. Wrong food, wrong spiritual food, words that are going into the very soul of that woman and making her polluted, just as if she were drinking and drugging. She's going to come up actually more hurt by the kind of pollution that you put into her. She'd be better off to eat garbage than to listen to your reproachful, scornful, sarcastic language. And then I know that most of the ladies here say, yes, brother, that's right. But see, I've heard you talk too. You're also a garbage mouth. And you see, I'm not talking about four-letter words. I'm talking about sarcastic, scornful language that's as a result of you being ashamed. You're delaying finding out what's wrong with you. You're too interested in finding out what's wrong with him, and vice versa. Taunt also means to be provoked by taunting, by being scornful. It means to be sarcastic. Now, you know how sarcastic sarcasm works, which is redundant, but you'll see it in a minute. Sarcasm, when a person is talking sarcastically, when you're confounded, railing for railing, accusation for accusation, not wanting to deal what's wrong with you, but defending what's wrong with you by finding out what's wrong with them, is sarcasm. And sarcasm means speak bitterly and cut flesh. You know what that means. We even talk, I said, boy, you cut me. You cut me right to the heart. Well, we go just a little bit further in the definition of sarcasm, and it means to tear flesh like dogs. Now, if you've ever seen a dog fight, that's a real dog fight, and you'll see people that become oblivious. They could care less about how much of their flesh is being torn. They have one goal in mind, tear flesh. And doesn't matter how much of theirs get teared, their happiness, their involvement, they're like pit bulls, like wild dogs. They become oblivious to their own pain. See, you can't hurt them with these cutting remarks. See, what they're interested in, where they're getting their jollies, is in cutting you. And she's getting hers in cutting you. So you see, you both become oblivious of your own wounds. That's why you escalate and escalate and escalate to the point that you're saying absolutely horrible things to each other. That at the beginning of your marriage, one-tenth of that would have broken your heart. Now you spit in his face and he says 10 times as much. Why? Because you're tearing each other's flesh like dogs. That's sarcasm. I try to help you. I try to do things for you. And you wait and wait. And if someone comes to you with a word, say, well, I don't really like him or this and that, boy, you jump on that and you start chewing that bone right away, don't you? Tearing flesh like dogs. Why don't you do yourself a favor? I'll tell you how you'll know if it's true. Don't tear my flesh in absentia. Call me and I'll stand in your face. And if you can do it, if you can tell me what you're willing to chew the cud on when I'm not there, then I'll thank God for the information and I'll change. But if you can't, if it doesn't stand up, then you ought to do the same thing. And we'll get it resolved that way. But you see, like a pack of dogs, they like to sit around and tear flesh. Sarcasm means taunting, searing, caustic, cutting remarks. It means an intent to hurt with mocking ridicule and veiled sneers. Oh, yeah, well, you're acting so good now, but how about then? See, those are veiled sneers. You're like a dog. And the minute you smell blood, the minute you see blood, you go crazy. And I'll tell you how you go crazy when you smell blood. Someone does something wrong, me, anybody, and will say, yes, I'm wrong. And I ask God to forgive me. And you smell blood, don't you? It's the blood of Christ, but blood is blood. And the minute you smell this blood, I'm confessing that I did something wrong. Rather than you seeing the blood of Christ and saying, well, that's mercy and forgiveness now, it turns a dog into a sniveling, snarling, cutting, ravaging beast. And you forget the fact that he's confessed. You forget the fact that he's trying to make it right with God. All you do is you smell the blood. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean there's something wrong with him because he's got the blood of Christ on him? No. There's something wrong with you because you're a wild dog. You're a sneering, tearing, caustic, cutting, fighting dog. Now, why would he say that? That's hard language. Well, if you take the word dog, do you know that almost no people ever get named Rex? Yeah. Rex is the name, another name for the devil. And you know what a dog is? Just look at it backwards. A dog is a backwards god. And if you look at the characteristics of dogs, see, I never have liked dogs. I don't like animals, period. They're fine with somebody else. Don't bring them around me. They're nasty, filthy creatures that have the morals of a dog. They have no loyalty. They'll go to whoever feeds them. They'll even bite whoever feeds them. And don't ever get around a dog that's sick. Because the sicker they are, the more, in fact, they muzzle them in the veterinary clinic. See, they don't care about anybody but themselves. Don't ever mess with a dog when he's eating either. Where's my dinner, woman? And he's sitting there putting it away. Well, sweetheart, don't talk to me. I've been working. Don't mess with a dog when he's eating. He'll bite you. Stay away from that animal. And don't trust them when they're wagging their tails either. See, because wives are a little bit different. See, hi, sweetheart. No, when you see the wagging tail, grab your wallet and your credit cards. There's a rear attack coming. They're out for some chops. They're dogs. See, because dogs are that way. They're backwards. They have, again, and they have no loyalty. That certain time of the year, it doesn't matter. Who cares? You see, so they have no loyalty to an individual. Oh, you might still have the same person in your life, but you no longer have a loyalty towards her or her towards you. They just want a little relief, just want a little sensual gratification. And why do I say that? Because that's the only time that you'll keep her complaining mouth shut, or him, by the way. The rest of the time, everything's wrong with you. Now, I don't understand this. I really don't. I do not understand living with a woman or a man, either one, depending on which one you are, in which all day long, you didn't do that right, you didn't do that, I don't like the way your hair looks, how come you're doing that, how come this, and just cut her to shreds all day long. Or the wife just cuts him to shreds all day long, and then when you get into bed at night, you think something magical is going to happen and this frog is going to turn into a prince and all you got to do is kiss him. It doesn't work that way, does it? Then all of a sudden the romance starts going out of the marriage. Why? Because you have cut him down all day long. All you do is look for faults in other individuals to justify what's wrong with you. So as a result, you're programming your body to be repulsed by this individual. Now, your body does not know what time it is. All it knows, as you said, he's a stinking dog. And he's repulsive. And everything's wrong with him. And everything that's wrong in your world is his fault. So now when that magic time comes, the programming stays the same. And with husbands, it works the same way. You see, all day long, you tore at each other like dogs. You tore each other's flesh like dogs. And some would say, oh, brother, I never do that. Oh, yes, you do. Oh, yes, you do. It is amazing to me to what extremes we can take certain things. And how we'll ignore the same thing in another given situation. I told my wife some time ago, you make no decisions without me. None. You bring them to me. However, if I'm not here or you're out somewhere, you already know what I believe. You already know what I think. You make the decision. Don't say, oh, I can't think, I can't do anything without my husband. Don't put me in that category. I said, now when you come back, you tell me what the decision was. If I didn't like it, I'll tell you why I don't like it, but I'll not overturn it. I'll just tell you next time that comes up, this is the way I want it done. I do not want my wife running after me like a trained little puppy. Because see, little puppies have a way of growing up. And little puppies are cute to begin with, but at the time their fangs get a little low, that little puppy is going to not be a little puppy anymore. So I'm not treating my wife like a puppy. And therefore I won't treat you like a puppy. Because when you grow up, you'll tear my flesh. So I'm saying, think a little bit. You know what's right. You know how we operate. You've seen me make, see, here's the problem. See, you're afraid that she's going to make the decision based on how you make them, not on what you told her. There's the big problem. So as a result, you have a bunch of little puppies walking around who can't make a simple everyday decision unless the grand poobah comes down from Mount Sinai and say, oh, yes, I give that my blessings. Give me a break. Get a life, will you? I mean, why do you have to have these mindless robots around you? See, God gave us a mind to think and independence. And he said, I want you to love me. Not out of fear, not out of threats, not out of intimidation, but just out of a clear desire. Boy, I'm going to do this way because I know that's the way he does it. Or I'm going to do this and then I'm going to check it with him right away because I respect his opinion. I know it always works right when I do it that way. That's great. That's love. Anything that's done different is dogs tearing each other's flesh in a dogfight. What ends up, it ends up insults start flying all over. Now, I'm going to share with you now at this next service how insults, see, people say, well, how come I can't help being hurt? They said this and it hurt me. I'm going to share with you now how to be totally insulated against that thing and start being an individual who's not affected by what's outside of you. Now, I'm going to do this, a calculated risk. I'm going to show you how to insulate yourself out of any words or actions that come externally of you. And the reason that I'm going to do this is that if you want to use it to turn me off, you go right ahead. But at least you'll have the ability. When you stand before God, you won't be able to say, I couldn't help it. What you'll have to say is, I used it to turn off your word, and I didn't use it to turn off the sneering, insulting, flesh-tearing things that came from the world that caused me to act like I did. And if that's the case, then it's your decision. But I'm going to show you how anyway. When you walk out of here, you will never be affected again ignorantly by anything around you or anyone around you. And I'm going to show you a very simple principle that no one can deny, that none of you had thought of. And as soon as you hear it, you're going to say, oh, well, I knew that. Yeah. Well, then tell me right now. No, you can't. You'll know it when I tell you. And not before, by the way. Brother Ken, would you close the service in prayer? But you see, the Lord is the Lord, and he has a way of keeping us in mind that just saying good things to one another and good spiritual food isn't really enough. So In the spirit of Christmas, which I've just learned about, I want you to know that the Lord Jesus Christ wants to take us all out for lunch after service. So if you'll convene at Sizzler, the Lord's going to pay for the whole thing. So we'll have spiritual food and physical food. Please, I do not want to hear anyone speak or even think that this is from me. This is from the Lord Jesus Christ. There's a lot of people involved in how money trickles down, and we're just all messengers. We just carry it and just think of where it came from. So if you don't like this food, maybe you'll go for the dessert a little bit more. But we'll get you one way or the other. I don't think you'll complain over there, because over there you get to choose whatever you want. Here you don't. I decide what you eat here. Or spit out. I mean, you can spit it out if you want. So we'll see you all at Sizzler as soon as the service is over. Just line up. I'll have Karen count everybody and explain to them, and then I'll pay for it at the end there with the Lord's money that he gave. It's not coming from me. You give the Lord the credit for it. Our Father and our God, we thank you, Lord, again for the privilege, the opportunity, and the honor of preaching, teaching, and hearing your word. Thank you, Father, for showing us that you're concerned and provide for us, not only spiritually, but physically as well. I thank you for this day. In Jesus' name, amen. Isaiah 54:4, fear not, for thou shalt not be ashamed, neither be thou confounded, for thou shalt not be put to shame. For thou shalt forget the shame of thy youth, and shalt not remember the reproach of thy widowhood anymore. We left off studying the word confounded with sarcasm. And it means, if you remember, a sneering, cutting, flesh-tearing remark. Well, I know that people have a tendency to think that physical illness has nothing to do with how we talk to each other. Now, husbands, I'm going to share something with you here that will help your insurance claims. You won't have to spend as much money for medicines and doctors and all of this. I'm going to share with you how you contribute to making your family not only sick, but ultimately sick of you. It's in the word sarcasm or confounded. It means a remark, a cutting remark. That's an insult. So when an individual, when you go to insulting each other, be careful. Be careful if you're the one that insults. But more importantly, I'm going to be talking to those of you who don't know how to handle an insult. I'm going to teach you how to handle an insult and handle it so that it doesn't hurt you. Now, to understand what this means, we need to know what insult means. It means a remark that is meant to hurt the feelings or the pride. Everyone knows that. Here's what you didn't know, and I've been preaching this ever since you've known me. Did you know that insult also means a wound, damage, or injury to tissues or organs of the body? Now understand what happens now. The word insult means not only something that hurts your feelings, your pride, but once it hurts your feelings and your pride, insult also means a hurt, injury, or a wound to your flesh, to the body. So you see all this insulting remarks back and forth, and then people say, well, I don't understand, brother. We're drinking right water, and we pay $7 million a month for water, and we're still all sick. Well, wait a minute. It's not the water. It's the insults. And it's not only the fact that you're insulting, it's how the insults are being handled. They become a wound or damage to tissues and organs. Now we need to find out how to handle those things. How do you handle these insulting, wounding people? Well, we look up the word wound. And it means a hurt, an injury, to the feelings, to the honor, or to the body caused by an external force. Now that basically means when you think in terms of your body, something, an external force cannot hurt your body unless it connects with your body. And then your body has a reaction to that connection. And it can't do anything about the reaction. The only way you have is to forego the connection. Now, Tyson and Holyfield and all those other people, they know that don't let the guy connect. Amen. See, that's where it doesn't matter how strong the other person is. You're all right as long as they don't connect. Well, if that's the only way external force can hurt your body is by connecting, then how in the world can an external force hurt your feelings and honor? Well, by the same way, it has to connect. Well, how does it connect? How does this external force connect feelings and honor and pride? Well, when I got to that point, I said, Lord, now where am I going with this? And I heard in my mind, I didn't hear no voices, electricity. It's an external force. It cannot hurt you unless it's grounded. Unless it's connected, in other words. So I looked up the word ground or grounded. And I found, and I don't know anything mechanically, but I know a little bit more now. It means to connect an electrical conductor with the ground, which then becomes part of the circuit. So you see, in order for this external force, this electricity, and that's what it is. See, you can't think without electrical impulses. It's electricity. You can't speak unless electricity, electric impulses stimulate certain part of your motor mechanisms and make them react to that electricity. So you see, this is actually electricity that's coming from the other individual. We call them vibes, we call it the force, we call it spirit, but it's electricity. Now, the only way this electricity can hurt you is you have to connect an electric conductor with the ground. It has to be grounded. Then the ground becomes part of the current, becomes part of the circuit. Then it becomes part of the power. You have to then suffer the power. It's like sitting in the electric chair. See, you become the ground. And then you become part of the circuit. And it'll fry your brains and your tootsies and a few other things. Well, how do we ground? How do things get grounded when an insult comes? What happens? What's this grounding process that takes place? Well, you look further at this ground, which becomes part of the current now, becomes part of the circuit. You look a little further in the definition of the word ground, and it means the base or the bottom of anything. In other words, when you get insulted, when you get hurt, it's when they've gotten to the base or the bottom of this. We've gotten to the bottom of it, haven't we? So you look up further in the word ground, and it means any area of discussion, topic, subject, foundation, the bare elementary principles of any given situation. So you see, every time you get hurt by the insult, that old saying, the truth hurts, is absolutely correct. You have just been grounded, friend. Now, what happens when your children don't act right and you bust them? What do you say? You're grounded. We've completed the circuit. Human beings, adults, don't like this principle, but it doesn't really matter whether you like it or not. It's the truth. The minute you get grounded, and why is it that you get grounded? Well, because those are things I told you about that you refused to admit. You refused to eliminate that electrical conductor. I told you that was something wrong in your life. I said there's something wrong in there, and you don't want to deal with it. Now, when this other individual, whether it's your wife or your husband or somebody at work, comes and gives you this insult, and it is the bottom, it's the bottom of what we're talking about, it is actually what's wrong with you, then that becomes the electrical conductor, the insult, then you become the ground, because that is you. That's the truth about you. The circuit is completed and you get fried. You become part. Then the force that's external, the force in that insult actually starts affecting you. Now you, being a stupid human being, think that the force is in what the person was saying. No, the force was not in what the person was saying. The force was in the fact that it hit bottom. It was true. Now, God doesn't fry you that way. He comes first in a human being like me and says, why don't you remove that thing? Someone's going to come along and hook you up to that. And that's what happens with human beings. And what do people do? Well, you try to change wives, change jobs, change friends, change everything, hoping that somehow that's going to change you. Well, you still have the same problem. And the next person that says anything about you that's true, they're going to ground you. You're going to have an injury caused by this external force, because it really is at the base or bottom of what we're talking about. Now, think back now. Not one thing has upset you about what anybody said that I didn't tell you first in a sermon, that wasn't direct, it didn't shame you, it didn't point any fingers at you. I begged with you, I pleaded with you, I preached at you, I counseled with you. I did everything humanly possible to remove that electrical conductor so that you would no longer be grounded by those insults. But you think you know better, friend. And I'm here to tell you, on your best day, you will never know better than this man. Because God put me here. And if I had to depend on myself, I'd go sit down there with the rest of you and we'd look at the wall. So now what's happened here? Well, you've become part of the circuit. You're grounded. This insult hit bottom. It's the truth. But you see, you want to deal with it in terms of an insult. You'll admit it then. But when I tell you in a sermon or in counseling, and not as an insult, you'll deny it. See, because I don't hook you up. I don't ground you to it. I try to get you to admit it. You have to wait till someone comes and accuses you of it. That's when the ground is complete. That's when the circuit is complete. And I don't do that. I wait till you call me. I only answer the questions you ask, and I don't do it in an insulting way. So as a result, you reject that, and then you'll wait for someone to come and do the same thing, but in an insulting way. That completes the circuit. The external force of that cutting remark then hurts you. It almost like fries you internally. It'll depress you. It'll make you angry. It'll make you hurt. It'll have all manner of different adverse effects on you. And it was an external force which you became the part of the circuit because you were grounded by this electrical conductor. Now, what's this circuit business? How is it? What's wrong with becoming part of the circuit? Well, circuit comes from two words, circum, which means around, and ire. It's actually the word, archaic word, is circumire. And it means, ire means to go, and circum means around. So circuit means to go around. You've heard the expression, whatever goes around comes around. See, all of this, see, everything is true, isn't it?
Yeah.
Circuit now also means a complete path over which current may flow. So you see, if you don't become part of the circuit, then the current gets cut off when it gets to you. Because there's no electrical conductor. You've removed the conductor. So therefore, you can't be grounded to it. There's no way that the circuit can be complete now, because circuit means the complete path over which current may flow. Now people say to me, how come it is that you never get mad at us? You never get upset? And it doesn't matter what's happened, you just take it calm and cool. Because I already know that anything you can think or say about me is true, and then some. So I've taken those conductors out of my life. I've confessed them. I got it right with God. And I've even told you that I'm a sinner. I didn't tell you what, because you're too much of a blabbermouth. God's the only one I can trust. Or a man called of God.
They're the only ones I can trust. You are a gossiping blabbermouth. And every time you get an opportunity to use it against me, you would. And the time that you would use it against me is whenever there's something wrong with you. So see, I don't do with blabbermouths. So now you are a part of the circuit. Well, when you become part of the circuit, then you suffer the current. You pass the current through the circuit. Well, let's find out what current means. It means whatever's going on now. Current address, current news. Current means whatever's going on now, whatever's in progress, what's happening at the present time. But you know that current also means passing from person to person? I didn't know that. If you look up the word current, besides meaning what's going on right now, what's happening now, brother, it also means what's passing from person to person. So you see, the current passes from person to person. Now, the person becomes the ground by means of an electrical conductor. Well, what's a conductor? We got to find out what these things are now. So we look up the word conductor. Now, I'm telling you this to show you all the elements that are necessary in you for you to be hurt by external forces, things that are meant to hurt your feelings, your pride, and your body. And if you don't learn this, if you reject this, then up your Blue Cross Blue Shield, because you're going to need it. I could have said up something else, but I said no. Up your Blue Cross and up your Blue Shield. See, sometimes I have to beat you to the punch because I know how your mind works. So now we have to remove this. What is this conductor that is necessary so that I can become the ground, so that I can become part of the circuit over which the current passes, which means then I suffer the same force of the individual. In other words, see, no one has any power over you. Those words mean nothing unless you are not smart enough to accept this, that you need an electrical conductor and you have to be the ground. It has to be true about you. And rather than accept it and say, thank you, Lord, for showing me something that's true about me so that you can confess it, you'd rather sit there and hold the wire and deny it and get a permanent. Not too bright. Hopefully that will change. But now we're talking about conductors. Conductor is a substance or thing that conducts three things: electricity, heat, and sound. Well, that sounds like a human being. A substance or thing that conducts three things: electricity, heat, and sound. Well, what is it? What in your body conducts electricity? Your soul, your brain. What in your body conducts heat? Your body. What about you conducts sound? Your spirit. It takes air to speak. So you see, the conductor has these properties. It's something that conducts electricity, heat, and sound, but it's really the definition of a human being as well. So you see, everything in nature, God, see, when God created, he said he creates in his image and likeness. If I'm in his image and likeness, then electricity is in his image and likeness, and all of nature is in his image and likeness. So if I understand how he works, then I'll know how I work, then I know how nature works. How else could I know nothing about a car and someone tell me something and I just say, well, wait a minute. It's not getting electricity. It's not getting gas. Well, when I don't do that, then I know how my body works. I know how I was made. And I can say, and almost always it's true. It's usually either part of it or it's the whole thing. Why? Because I've learned that everything is in the image and likeness of God. Why? Because he created everything. So it's got to be in his image and likeness. So now electrical conductors have the properties of conducting electricity, heat, and sound. Well, that's the same properties my body has. So how an electrical conductor works in an electrical machine is the same way my body will work in terms of external force that I allow to become the ground of is going to affect me the same way. So now we have a conductor. Conductor or conduct means that it is able to transmit, carry, and convey. In other words, the force, the insult, the injury of those words need you as a conductor to carry the force and complete the circuit. In other words, you need to be part of this circuit so that the current, that the force that's coming from this individual, which really is from the devil, now has power to hurt your feelings, hurt your pride, and hurt your body. Is it any wonder that after there's a big knockdown, drag-out battle in any family, and if it doesn't get resolved, sooner or later, one or both start coughing and start having some kind of a physical problem? Well, it's a result of insults. So you see, you've become a circuit. You've become part of the circuit by which the current flows. So that means that every component within that circuit suffers the same force at the source or any part of the circuit. It'll have the same effect, the same force, the same power, the same everything. Well, we say, my God in heaven, what are we going to do? I'm part of the circuit. Well, what do we need then? We need a circuit breaker. Now, all you have to do is go in your apartment. See that box back there? The circuit breakers. See up here? Circuit breaker. Husbands, you could be a circuit breaker. Wives, for your children, you could be a circuit breaker. Instead, you're the insulting force. Now, let me tell you how a circuit breaker works. And I want, if I could, I would surgically implant circuit breakers in all of you. God has given me a circuit breaker. Let me tell you how it works. Circuit breaker means a device that automatically interrupts the flow of an electrical current when the current becomes excessive. In other words, husbands, you need to have a circuit breaker in you. Wives, you need to have a circuit breaker. God has made me the physical circuit breaker to show you how it works. Not to become yours, but to show you how it works. Well, what does the circuit breaker do? Obviously, no electricity through your brain would mean you're dead. No electricity through your body would mean you're paralyzed. No electricity through your spirit means you wouldn't be able to breathe. You'd have to be on an iron lung. So it isn't the electricity, the force, the power. It's the excess. So you see, the circuit breaker is set so that the current won't burn the building down. If it goes beyond that, the circuit breaker kicks in, shuts everything down until we can get it repaired. The alternative is to burn down the building, which obviously we do not want to do. We don't want to burn down the temple either. So you see, this is a device that automatically opens and breaks the connection, interrupts the flow of the electrical current when the current becomes excessive. Keyword, excessive. Now remember, current meant passing from person to person. So excessive current means excess passing from person to person. Now I'm going to tell you why your husband makes you upset and hurts you with his comments. There's excess passing from person to person. See, because when the current becomes excessive, that's when the hurt becomes. Other than that, the lights work fine, the car runs, everything works great as long as the current is right. The minute the force, listen to this, you mighty macho husbands, the minute the force, the current, the power becomes excessive, the circuit breaker does this. At that point, she's not listening to you. She could care less what you're saying. She can't hear you, doesn't want to hear you. Neither can the kids. No one can hear you. And I see how your circuit breaker works when this force becomes excessive. They open, the flow stops, and you start doing this. Well, the lights go out, don't they, in Georgia or wherever they went out? Yeah, the lights went out in Georgia. See, I see that when your circuit breaker goes out.
Yeah.
So I know you have circuit breakers because I know you can turn me off just like that. You turn each other off just like that. So you have circuit breakers. They're just set wrong. See, they're supposed to open when the current becomes excessive. So you see, what I'm saying is not that it's bad to have a circuit breaker. I'm saying that's good. What I'm telling you husbands is that her circuit breaker will come into effect the minute you become excessive. Wives, the minute you become excessive, his circuit breaker will interrupt the flow. Parents, when you become excessive, this device inside of your children, this circuit breaker will open and the flow will cease and they'll look at you and you could swear to God they understand what you said and they did not. You can beat them, you can do what you want. They are never, you put them in the corner until they need a shave. They're not going to get it because the circuit breaker has opened. Why? Because you're excessive, friend. That's why. There's an excessive flow of force. You're trying to force them to do something. And you know why, God? You'll never, ever, ever put that at God's doorstep. He is never excessive. I don't force you. I don't change. I don't get mad at you. If you want to go off by yourself, go. When you come back, I treat you the same way. You are never going to say that your circuit breaker opened automatically because of excessive force. That's a flat lie. And that's why individuals, by the way, have a real easy time coming back after having insulted Lo these many years. Because I didn't complete the circuit. So now, what causes this excessive behavior to open the circuit breaker in your wives and your children and your husbands? It's when you become excessive. Excessive current, current meaning something excessive passing from person to person. Well, what does excessive mean? Action or conduct that goes beyond the usual, the reasonable, or the lawful limit. You see, no one said that you weren't the husband and that you didn't have authority. No one said that you weren't the wife and that you weren't a human being that had the right to be treated like a human being. No one's trying to take away from you those things. The problem is when people become excessive with one another. The husband wants excessive power. The woman wants excessive liberty to do whatever she wants. Well, the minute you start giving him excess, excessive behavior, his circuit breaker is programmed to open. The current or the circuit is broken. The current no longer flows. And when current isn't flowing, what happens? You're not thinking anymore. See, your mind cannot think without electricity. There has to be a circuit. We have to be connected. We have to be on the same wavelength. We have to be on the same frequency. We have to be tuned into the same channel, or it doesn't work. Well, you see, I hear it even sometimes, click. And it just like you're gone. Well, the problem is you've become excessive. Your action and your conduct goes beyond the usual, reasonable, or lawful limit. Well, how does that happen? How does something become excessive? Well, when you go out to eat, you buy whatever the hell you want, and you eat whatever you feel like it. That's the usual. That's the action or conduct that's usual for you. Now you go out with your wife and children. Oh, no. No, no, no. They can't have this, and they can't have this, and they can't have that. Well, that's action or conduct that goes beyond the usual, because for you, the usual was you eat whatever the hell you want. Now, the usual conduct or action is you go to the store, and you see something, you buy it. You flip out the credit card, you could give a damn less, you just buy it. So that's the usual. Now, your wife is wearing a newspaper and a cardboard box. And she's kind of tired of having tied on her back. And she says, may I have a dress? Oh, no, no, we can't. Don't you know how many bills we... How dare you? What's the matter with you? We can buy some more soap. A bigger... Well, we need economy size tied now. We need a cage. Let's go to Price Club and buy a great big box. Well, isn't that a little different than the usual way? The usual action, the usual conduct? You make a mistake, you just want to blow it off. She makes one, no. Now that becomes excessive. Even though, and here's the subtlety of Satan, even though you might be absolutely right, that woman might be doing something that's clearly and blatantly wrong, but your reaction to her wrong is excessive because it goes beyond what's usual for you in the same circumstances. So you see, if you don't want to live by God's rules, and God says, then you make the rules. But then everybody doesn't live by the rules that you even make. So now what has happened? You have excessive action conduct that goes beyond the usual. Well, everybody gets hung on that one, but it also goes beyond the reasonable. Why did you buy that car? We already have two or three of them. I wanted it, that's why. Well, that's not reasonable. That's not a reason. But then she wants to buy a pair of socks, and she's willing to buy one at a time. Layaway socks. And she's got to hobble on one foot till she can afford to buy the other one. So you see, her reasons, reasons don't mean anything. You just do it because you're the boss. Because me, Tonto. Yes. Me, big guy. No, you, fool. She's going to be laughing at you sooner or later, clown. I know what I'm talking about. Hey, there's people out there still laughing at me. Say, hey, this guy worked and he made all this money, and they're enjoying it. Laugh, clown, laugh. See, I don't like that. They're still laughing at me. I'm not going to make that mistake again. I'm nobody's fool anymore. You ain't never going to find me clowning around again. There's too many people ready and willing to laugh at you. Thank you very much. So now, excessive means action or conduct that goes beyond the usual. You've been hung on that. Now it goes beyond the reasonable. You've been hung on that too. Now here comes your last. Well, where does it say in the Bible? I've shown you that too. So you say, well, the Bible's too hard and we're under grace, so let's do away with the lawful. And then we come to the reasonable, and of course, your reasons are good and her are non-existent. You have no reasons, but that's okay. You're the boss. So you go beyond reasonable. And then finally, the most liberal of all, God says, okay, if you want to spend like a drunken sailor, and that's the usual way, that's not smart, but if that's the usual way, that's the norm, that's the way you want to handle it, we'll judge you according to you. Well, what happens? You get to spend and she doesn't. You get to do and she doesn't. Wife, she gets to do, but the kids don't. So you see, if it's at the lawful stage, at the reasonable stage, or even at the usual stage, you fall down on all of them. And those people that say, well, the Bible is full of grace and the law doesn't apply to us, okay, I'll buy that one. What about reasonable? How come when I ask you, why did you do that? Because I don't want to talk about it. It's her fault. Well, I didn't ask. I said, what's the reason? Why did you do that? Well, see, then we can't deal with you because you've gone beyond the reasonable. And then I say, are you against her? Well, she did that, and I don't like it. But I say, well, brother, that's usual for you, though. So you see, it becomes excessive depending on where you set the standards. Now, notice, if you will, in the definition, usual comes first, which means it's the most restrictive. Reasonable comes second, which means it's further down the line. What comes last? Lawful. So actually, this Bible gives you more liberty than your reasons
or your usual behavior. That's the most restrictive. But Satan has you thinking that your usual reasonable way is more liberal and more freedom-bearing than lawful. Well, by definition, lawful comes last. Excessive also means lack of moderation, overindulgence, if you will. Now, when that happens, when you lack moderation, when you overindulge, yet you have a different standard for those around you, you are now excessive. There's excessive current. You're being excessive with your wife. You're being excessive with yourself. You're being excessive with the children. You're even being excessive toward the Lord. Now, there's only two things you can do. Break the current or be fried, burned out. And how many times have I heard even people sitting in this room say, I'm burned out on this marriage. I'm burned out on him. I just can't take it anymore. Well, what's happened? He's gone beyond the usual, reasonable, and the lawful. And in that order. And here's the irony of it all. The Saint Aloysius is telling you all of these rules and guidelines, and he is guilty of lack of moderation and overindulgence, which he certainly has a reason for, of course. But what happens is that the wife then turns off and the circuit is broken. Now you might think, well, so what? That at least shut her up and I don't have to listen to her. Well, don't be too sure. Because you see, there's going to come a time along about 11 o'clock where you're going to want to make some contact. And you're going to want some current, some circuit. You want a connection, if you will. And she's going to say, huh? Not tonight. I got a headache. I don't feel like it. No. What? Again? Well, what's happened? Circuit breaker's closed. Or open, rather, in this case. Now, in all other instances, you could care less. All of a sudden, you dial and say, call the electrician. Come up here and fix her. We got a short here. Something's wrong. Something's not working. I say, wait a minute. We can't. I don't come up and just put a little patch on there with some electrical tape. We may need a rewiring job here. I don't know. Something is definitely wrong here. But you see, the very thing that you took as tacit approval on her part, you turned her off. So she finally just, whatever. You thought you've won. You thought you've made it. You thought you're right. No, all you've done is you've been excessive and the circuit breaker kicked on. And now there is no connection between you and her. You think you've won. You think you've put something over on the Lord. I'm going to tell you, there's going to come a time when you're going to wish and pray that that circuit breaker was connected and it won't be. Why? Because you're still excessive. See, all you have to do, if there was a surge, if there was more power being drawn than the lines could handle, let's say we brought in and hooked up a lot of things, that circuit breaker would go off just like that. You could go back and flip it on again and it would kick off again. Flip it on again and it would kick off again. I mean, you can do that all day long. It is not going to work until you cut back to the excess. The minute there's no more excess, you flip that on and everything's on again. Brother, you are not going to do it your way. You are not going to be excessive in action, conduct, and behavior and not turn off your family, turn off your children, and ultimately you will even turn yourself off. Now, somehow or other, you think that physically you can find a way around that, but yet if I stood you back there and let you flip that switch back there from now to kingdom come, you would say, that's stupid. It's never going to work until we cut down the excess, and I would agree with you. But because I tell you this physically, spiritually, and emotionally, you think you still know better. You really believe because you've turned her off. You really believe because you've broken the circuit with the Lord, and he says, go ahead, son. I'll turn you over to a reprobate mind. You figure it out. He's not agreeing with you. He's not condoning what you're doing. You've broken the connection. Why? Because you want to use the Lord for your excesses. Now, I learned that principle very simply in my life. The more I would keep things the way they should be, the more the connection, the more the power flowed,
The minute I got excessive in any area whatsoever, the circuit breaker went off and there was no more power. Now, if God works that way in his relationship with me, and he works that way in his relationship with you, how could you hope to be excessive with one another and not break the connection? Then your children will learn this game that you're playing, and they become excessive. And when they become excessive, the teacher at school is turned off, their friends are turned off, and everybody's turned off to them, so they're turned off. And then some sleazy, scum-sucking rat will come up and say, I've got something to turn you on. That's the way you all got into it. Every one of you got into it that way. Some scum-sucking rat wanted to turn you on. That's not the problem. I don't judge them. A rat is a rat, and scum is scum, and sucking is sucking. That's not the problem. You know what the problem is? You're turned off. You've been turned off by life. You're just turned off. Why? Because of excess. Why do I tell people, stop overeating. Stop putting excessive this and that in your system. The more you excess your system, the more the circuits break. They say, no, we can't handle anymore. Now, after a while, you put enough junk in your body, and the circuit breaker will open. The current won't pass anymore, and you're a vegetable. You see, God wants you to understand, if this principle works, something as simple as electricity that we can all understand, why would you think that an electrical system, much more complex, but working under the same principles as that box back there, is going to work any different? I mean, what the hell is the matter with your mind? Can you not see that God is saying, look, I'm going to bring it down to the most basic, fundamental principles, and I'm going to do it with a man that doesn't know that you don't supposed to light those light bulbs. He doesn't know how that works. I had no idea when I got to this definition of wound and external force. I thought, well, where am I? It was like I was stuck. I didn't know where to go. I knew there was something there. And I knew that external force. And then I thought, well, if it's the body, there has to be a connection. The force has to connect with your body. In other words, the punch has to be grounded by your face. Right. And then when I thought of it that way, the first thing that came to my mind was electricity. And then I started reading about that. I said, my God in heaven, there it is. So obvious, so clear. And then I start thinking of all the excesses. See, when I get if I get excessively angry at you for being stupid, the circuit breaks. We've lost contact. That's dumb on my part. I'm not to judge you. I'm not your judge. So all I have to do is not be excessive. Stay cool. Stay moderate. You're excessive enough for both of us. Thank you. So what you do is you trip the circuit breaker, and then you think somehow she doesn't love you anymore. And listen, I don't understand how the hell she loved you in the first place. So see, if we're going to go it that way, I can make a better argument for her never having loved you at all. But obviously she did. She's still living with you. She's still suffering this crap. What is the problem? Open circuit breakers. Why? Excess. You're excessive. You go and put on her beyond what's usual for you, beyond what's reasonable, and beyond what's lawful. And the minute you do that, you become excessive. You become excessive current, and automatically, and wives, I know how you feel. You say, well, I don't understand. I still love him. I still love the Lord. But I just turned off by it. What's happened? Circuit breakers. It's automatic. I'll tell you again. Circuit breaker is a device that automatically interrupts the flow of an electrical current when the current becomes excessive. Wives, listen to this. It's a part of you that automatically interrupts the flow when the flow becomes excessive. When what they're telling you is beyond what they decided was usual, what they decided was reasonable, and what is lawful, you will automatically turn it off. You can't help yourself. Husbands, don't blame yourself. The minute your wife is demanding things of you that are beyond the usual, beyond the reasonable, and beyond the lawful, you will be turned off. Even though you still love her, there's no current. She's demanding. She wants things that are excessive. She's giving part of your current to the children. Part of the force that goes to you is vested in other areas. There's a lot of shorts in the system. A lot of people drawing off. See, whenever you short something, it means the circuit was intended to go this way. Now along comes a little snot-nosed kid who wants to tap in on the circuit. And wives, you are the most famous for this. You let them somehow get into the current, the circuit, that belongs between you and your husband. Now what do you have the minute that happens? You got a short. And what happens the minute the circuit breaker recognizes there's something's wrong? It's the electricity, the current is not flowing the way it was intended. It's being sapped off. It's going somewhere wrong. What happens? The circuit breaker cuts it off so that the current no longer goes, not only around, but doesn't go where it shouldn't go, and that's where it causes damage. I have never seen a family yet where the, quote, current wasn't interrupted by one of two things. Excess on the man's part toward the wife, excess on the woman's part toward the man, or a short.